The 100 Years' War, the Du Guesclin period. English forces land in France in June of 1378. The Earl of Arundel and that veteran of past maritime expeditions, William Montague, the Earl of Salisbury, sailed from Southampton in the first few days of June 1378 with all the ships and men which were ready at Southampton. So there were about 2,000 soldiers carried on some 80 vessels. On about the June 7th, the English fleet entered the estuary of the Seine and appeared off the French naval base at Harfleur. Arundel landed at least part of his army near the town and began to try its landward defenses. The French had no coast guard system comparable to the one which operated in southern England. The old marshal, Mouton de Blainville, was in command of the Pas de Caux, but was taken completely unawares and only had 100 men-at-arms under his command. But he valiantly fought off Arundel's force from the walls of Harfleur. With no siege equipment, the English were unable to make any impression on the modern defenses of the town. On about June the 21st, they retreated to their ships, pursued by sortie parties from the town, which inflicted heavy casualties on the encumbered soldiers as they struggled through the water to clamber over the sides of the ships. From Harfleur, Arundel sailed westward, around the great bay of the Seine, toward Cherbourg. There Ramon d'Esparza let them pass into the harbor and admitted them to the castle. A few days later, a small squadron from Bayonne arrived, bringing the Lord of Garo back from Navarre with Charles's authority to agree to what had by now become a done deal. With him came Charles's nephew, Charlotte de Beaumont, and some Navarrese troops. On June the 27th, the Navarrese agents formally handed possession to the English king's commissioners in the name of their master. The first English garrison troops arrived in the town shortly afterwards. Arundel had actually been very lucky. It was only in the last few days of his cruise that he encountered any serious opposition at sea. The mobilization of the French galleys and barges had been severely delayed. The oarsmen were in the process of mustering. The ships themselves were probably still in their covered hulls of the arsenal at Rouen. The Castilians arrived in the channel at about the middle of June and beached their ships at Saint-Malo, but they did not receive their orders until the end of the month. It was only at the very end of June that they caught up with the part of Arundel's fleet as it withdrew from Cherbourg. Early in August, as John of Gaunt completed the final preparations at Southampton for the departure of his armada, and Neville mustered his men at Plymouth to sail for Bordeaux, the Castilian galleys descended on the West Country. The English had expected them to attack the port embarkations and had called out the levies of the coastal counties to defend them. But the Castilians preferred booty and easy targets. They carefully avoided both ports. A number of landings occurred along the Dorset coast, but the brunt of the enemy attack fell on Cornwall. With almost all their ships and seamen pressed into the king's service elsewhere, the Cornish harbors were wide open to the invaders. Several of them were burned, including the important river port of Foy. Others had to pay heavy ransoms to spare them the same fate. John of Gaunt's army finally sailed from the Solent about August the 10th, 1378, with some 5,000 troops on board and probably about the same number of seamen, in addition to pages and varlets, artillery and stores. Judging by the size of the fleet, only a small part of the great host could have been mounted. When the English entered the great bay of Saint-Malo, they achieved complete surprise. They boarded the merchant ships in the roads, pillaged their cargoes, and burned the hulls. Then they landed on the eastern shore of the bay, took possession of the spit of land, which linked the island town to the mainland, and began to deploy their artillery against the walls. Saint-Malo was protected by modern ramparts, and at the eastern end, facing the spit, by a powerful castle held by a large French garrison. At first, the inhabitants panicked at the size of such a large host and sued for terms. Then they recovered their nerve and broke off negotiations. On about August the 14th, the English delivered their first assault. They were thrown back with heavy losses. Several more assaults followed, but all were unsuccessful. The English then set to work at the slow business of undermining the walls. Their mine was almost finished when a nighttime sortie from the town destroyed it. Dissension began to arise in the English camp. John of Gaunt fell out with the Earl of Arundel, whom he blamed for the disaster of the mine. In the first 2 weeks after their arrival, the French did very little to interfere with Gaunt's operations. The Castilian fleet was away burning villages in Cornwall. The French galley fleet had now been mobilized, but had no record of its deeds and was certainly not present at Saint-Malo. The Constable of France was with his army in the Cantine, where the main thrust of the English attack had been expected to come. He was forced to bring his men hurriedly south to meet the new threat. On about August the 24th, De Guesclin arrived at Denain at the head of the estuary south of Saint-Malo. He was joined there by Olivier de Clisson, with more troops raised in Brittany itself. Their combined strength was about 1,500 men, about a third of the size of the English army. They occupied the south of the bay and sent mounted raiders across the sand at low tide to carry out raids in the English rear. John of Gaunt now found himself severely hampered by the size of his own army, which was far too large for operations in which it was engaged and required an enormous flow of supplies to maintain it. Foraging inland became exceptionally difficult once the constable had occupied the shoreline opposite. The food ferrying in supplies from the south of England and the Channel Islands were unable to keep up with demand. Gaunt was running out of time. He had set up late in the season. Shipmasters would have to be back by the beginning of October to join the wine fleet for Bordeaux. In September, the whole campaign was abandoned. Some retinues had already gone home, probably because of supply problems. The rest reboarded their ships in the middle of the month and sailed away. The planned attack on La Cotroy was quietly abandoned. It was an anticlimactic end to the great expedition. The general view in England was that they had been defeated by incompetence and inertia. John of Gaunt, who had not only commanded the expedition, but played the leading role in planning it, received most of the blame. He never commanded an English army in France again. I would also point out, if you go to Saint-Malo, you'll see one or two of the original artillery pieces that the English brought for the siege, because they just abandoned them. And now they are there when you walk right in the main gate of Saint-Malo. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.